Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. Hope you have a good weekend planned, even with the COVID-19 restrictions that are in effect. Those restrictions, by the way, a source of major conflict now between Governor Gavin Newsom and at least a couple of Orange County cities, including Huntington Beach, which is threatening legal action against the governor's order to close all Orange County beaches effective today, and Newport Beach, which earlier this week voted to close beach parking lots as a way of limiting crowds, but not to close the beaches themselves. Later this hour, we'll talk with Orange County Supervisor Doug Chafee about the governor's restrictions, as well as Orange County's own protocols for reopening some non-essential businesses when the governor gives the okay to do that. Coming up next hour, it's Film Week. Our critics reviewing Bull, independent film that they have some very strong things to say about. Stars Rob Morgan and Amber Hovard. Annie Silverstein, the director and co-screenwriter. But we begin with our daily COVID-19 update with a state health professional joining us today from UC San Francisco Medical Center, infectious disease specialist and professor, Dr. Peter Chin Hong. Dr. Chin Hong, it's such a pleasure to have you joining us again.
Thanks for having me again, Larry.
Appreciate it. Let's start, first of all, with the number of states that are easing to some degree their stay-at-home protocols. There are about 35 states, as we understand it, that are starting to ease their restrictions. I know not all states have the same degree of outbreak, but your thoughts about them starting to do this?
I think I think people are doing it to varying degrees, and it depends on the context in which you live. So I think, for example, in California, it's probably not a bad idea to sort of reduce mildly some of the restrictions. I know some people are exercising a little bit more. We talked about the beaches, et cetera. But in some states adjacent to states that are still experiencing big hot zones, and I know the South is still having a large number of new cases, it may be a little bit premature. So it's really context dependent.
All right. And in a sense, it would seem this could benefit states like California and New York, because we'll see a bit what goes on over the next 2 weeks in those states easing restrictions, right?
Exactly. So there are two issues. One, of course, we've talked about before in this calls is about, you know, having more testing available. And I think that's evolved since the last time we spoke, because people are figuring out some different swabs that can be used. Testing capacity is being ramped up in some areas. But also, more excitingly, I think there are some non-swab methods that's been talked about, for example, sputum or saliva. And I think that gets away from somebody having to do it and use PPE, and someone can just spit in a urine cup and bring it to have it for to be analyzed.
Now, that saliva test, at least now, and I know this could change, doesn't that have about a 20% false negative rate?
Yeah, well, it depends on how you do it. Just like with any test, if you swab well, you get a good swab test because you want to get all those epithelial cells. So in the saliva test, I mean, in the way my colleagues at Hong Kong have done it, and they're the ones who developed it first, among the first anyway, you have to have the saliva has to be pooled and kind of sit in your mouth for a while, so it kind of marinates with where the virus lives. And that early morning sputum, which I don't think has been so well emphasized in the narrative here, is really going to give you a bigger bang for your buck.
Okay.
For sensitivity.
Okay, that makes sense. So if it's a good specimen, you think the test is reliable?
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's been published in already in terms of those test characteristics. And it does pretty well if done well.
All right. We're talking with UC San Francisco professor and infectious disease specialist Peter Chin Hong. If you have questions for Dr. Chin Hong, we're at 866-893-KPECC. You can also ask on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, tweet at AirTalk, or you can message us or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. Well, a little bit later, we're going to get deeper into the conflict over Orange County's beach closure that Governor Newsom mandated starting today. But Dr. Chin Hong, what are your thoughts about the ability of enforcing social distancing and facial covering on the beach?
Well, it's tough, right? Because it depends on your beach culture. It's just like if you talk about stadiums or other kinds of settings like that, because it's not just the physical aspects or the academic aspects or even the biologic aspects that we all know so well. It's been so ingrained in us, 6 feet apart. If you can't do that, wear a face covering. It's the human behavior aspect on top of that. So even though you might be able to control your environment and do the right thing, it doesn't prevent others around you from, you know, not obeying those orders or honoring those recommendations.
All right. Again, 866-893-KPECC. We welcome your calls to talk about COVID-19, what we're learning about the virus. Now, here in Los Angeles County, testing has ramped up significantly. In fact, the city of L.A. is offering any county resident, regardless of whether they have symptoms or not, to be able to use the L.A. City drive-through test facilities to get a test. So widespread testing, we understand, is key. But where are we at on tracking the positive results from the tests?
Exactly. So that's the other dimension I think people aren't talking about too much. And that's the old-fashioned gumshoe, hit the shoe on the ground running aspect of contact tracing. So in Wuhan, for example, to just give you some context, in an 11 million population city, they use 9,000 healthcare workers to do contact tracing. That is, you find somebody who's positive on one of these tests, and then you interview everyone around that person and test them, make sure they've got tested, and then you wall off the people who are infected from the people who are not infected. It's estimated that in California, we need up to 30,000 people if we are able to do that effectively.
One of the concerns here in Southern California, our media partner NBC4 reporting that several Ralph's supermarkets in Southern California have had clusters of COVID-19 cases. The largest one that NBC4 reports is at the Hollywood Ralph's on Sunset Boulevard, where 19 employees have tested positive. For the clusters like this, is that surprising to you if the employees are covering their faces?
It's not surprising to me at all, because covering your face is only part of the game. In a supermarket where you're standing for hours as a cashier or as a stocking person, you know, your nose is going to itch, you know, you're going to be sweating. And, you know, it's only a matter of time for hours where you're going to try to, you know, move that, you know, itch that a little bit. So you're going to probably move your hand in behind the nose. Maybe you're hanging out in the break room and you're going to remove your mask to eat. And so these are all, you know, of course, people have to investigate why these outbreaks occurred. But even in other places when they've used universal masking, for example, in Asia, they found that there were spikes when people gathered together for meals. And there was actually even one that's been published called the hot pot surge, where people gathered around hot pots to take off their masks, they ate, and then regardless of the fact whether or not they wore masks in the community, during those vulnerable periods, people were transmitting.
So what is the way? So if you can't socially distance, and obviously employees at supermarkets cannot, they don't have to have lunch together necessarily, mm-hmm. but you've got cases where employees, whether it's a bagger close to a checker, it's going to be tough to keep the 6 foot barrier. Is there anything in lieu of that that can help keep them safe?
And I thought about this problem from day one. I was going to Safeway, and I was feeling really sad for my cashier because at that point, people weren't really using community masking. And, you know, that person is less than 3 feet away from someone, particularly if you bought a lot of groceries and you're just standing in front of that cashier. Then I started noticing some supermarkets erecting plexiglass protection for the cashiers, and I thought that was a really progressive move. But I haven't seen that in all supermarkets, and I think those kinds of physical barriers, in addition to masking, just gives you an extra layer of security.
All right. We're talking with infectious disease specialist Dr. Peter Chin Hong of UC San Francisco Medical Center. He's professor of medicine at the noted medical school there. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. The Los Angeles Times yesterday published a story about a COVID patient who had 102 degree fever, mild cough, but continued to test positive for active COVID infection over a 40-day period from when he first felt ill until he finally tested negative for 2 days in a row. This might well be just one of those bizarre outliers that you see in medicine, but what do you make of it?
Yeah, so that's a great situation, Larry. We've been talking about it in our infectious disease group a long time, and the idea is that when you find these RNA fragments from the virus, even over a long period of time, we don't know if that's alive or dead. In fact, there's one study that showed that even though we call it shedding virus in the infectious disease community, even though you shed virus for a long time, in this one study, when they cultured all the virus that was isolated or the RNA that was isolated, actually, after day 8, none of those RNA fragments were indeed alive because they culture them. They put it on a Petri dish equivalent for viruses and see if they grew. If they didn't grow, even if you found that RNA, it suggests that that wasn't a live virus. So I think that's one factor. We don't do culturing on everyone anymore. It requires a higher level of biosafety, so it's not typically done in the clinical labs.
All right, Dr. Peter Chin Hong with us. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. One of the questions we hear so often from listeners, I have to say it's top of mind for me as both a live sports fan and a concert fan, what's going to allow us to get back to having large-scale events? Do we have to have a vaccine widely available for that to happen?
Yeah, so it is the six-letter word that will be the only thing, I think, before we go back to a football game or a baseball game or a soccer game. And that's because, again, it's like the beaches, all the beach policies will probably be relaxed over time, but stadiums will probably be the last thing to come on board, including and concerts too. And that's because, again, you can't control the behavior of people around you. And think about a stadium situation. It's charged emotionally. You're excited. You slobber all over the surfaces. Those surfaces are not going to be cleaned in between games. Your hot dog drops behind you. You reach out behind. Someone coughs on you. So it's a very
I'm never going to a game again after your description.
You know, I love games. I mean, and I know about it because I love them intimately. And I think it's just like I think about a good game as an adult preschool where people are just like slobbering and add some beer to that. And then you can imagine what are you going to have, like COVID-19 police to tell people stay 6 feet apart? They're probably going to get into the emotion of the game themselves.
Sure. No, I mean, it's excellent points you make. Discouraging to hear, but an excellent point. Norma in Lakewood says there are reports that that globally, I think she means, we stopped efforts to come up with a SARS vaccine as SARS dissipated. Would we be better off now if we had continued researching that even though SARS dissipated?
No, that's a great question. I think SARS is a very different situation than COVID-19. So that SARS was able to burn out. And that's because in SARS, people actually spread virus when they're sick. So you kind of didn't really need a test as much. You can keep the sick people away from the not sick people, and then it kind of burnt out. In COVID-19, as people know, it's very insidious. People transmit infections before they actually get sick. So those people in spring break, the people on the beaches, they may be feeling on top of the world, but they may be infected and then able to infect the people around them. So there's more motivation to doing a vaccine in COVID-19 just because it's not going to go away like SARS did.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center, joining us on Air Talk, infectious disease specialist. Just quick check-in on what's happening up in the Bay Area where you are. Is testing widely available there now?
So testing is not as widely available as in L.A. County. I think we look at it with a little bit of FOMO or like sort of slightly slight jealousy. I mean, I wish that it were more available. It is coming on board in certain communities like the Mission. There have been demonstration projects where everyone in the community who wanted to be screened were able to. Certainly, the Department of Public Health has allowed for some time now essential workers to get screened on the Embarcadero. So there are little effects and interventions being done, but I think not as large scale as in L.A. County. But I think what we have been doing is bolstering our workforce for contact tracing, and I think together those two things will probably be a good intervention.
Kevin in the North Valley says, can you explain a bit more about herd immunity, how that works, and what it takes to reach that point, particularly time-wise?
Yeah, so so herd immunity comes from the world of vaccinations, which means that if you vaccinate enough people, say like with measles, for example, even if not everyone gets vaccinated, you can protect the people who haven't been vaccinated because you basically are, everyone who's vaccinated becomes like a bodyguard to the person who isn't vaccinated. Think of the term comes from like, think of a herd of cattle. Suppose there was one cattle who wasn't vaccinated and it was weak and frail, maybe behind a bunch of cattle. If some other cattle comes that was infected to the front of the herd, there are enough people that will stop that chain of transmission at the beginning, sort of the henchmen of immunity that would protect that vulnerable cattle in the back of the herd. So you need about 70% to 80% of the population to really give that herd immunity, which is not achievable unless you have a vaccine.
So there, you can't, even with all these silent, so to speak, cases that are asymptomatic, you still don't think it's reachable?
Because we know from cold immunity data, meaning like a regular coronavirus causing a cold, that people don't really actually respond with antibodies. You kind of have to be a little sicker to get the body to be angry enough to bother to make antibodies. So we think probably the sickest people will probably have those robust antibodies, but probably not the mild or asymptomatic people.
Dr. Chin Hong, so beautifully explained as always, and we appreciate your being with us again. We wish you and your family members and colleagues at UCSF good health. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks, Larry.
We appreciate it. Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center and infectious disease specialist, professor of medicine at UCSF. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC on the KPCC app and on smart speakers throughout the United States. All you have to do is just ask your smart speaker by name, play KPCC. But I won't say the name because then I'd be talking to your smart speaker, right? And that's kind of creepy. Who knows what I'd make it do? We'll be back with more on Air Talk in just a minute.